Welcome back to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Over the last 2 weeks, we have explained to you why content curation is important, plus how to do it effectively, and we dove headfirst into link curation and described different processes and systems for doing it effectively. Today, Damien and I discuss ideas, specifically what to do with the amazing ideas that you come across through reading, research, and just daily life, and the ideas that your mind creates when you least expect it. The blank page, writer's block. Newer writers often claim to fear both of these. They've been conditioned to do so. And I know I did, and I'll admit sometimes I still do. But as I've studied writers, successful writers, I've found that most of them have found ways to overcome the trepidation of the blank page. And most don't even consider quote-unquote writer's block to be a real thing. So what is it that separates these writers from you and me? Two traits I've found. Number one, they've found a way to channel their fear into productivity. And number two, they have a system for recording and recalling ideas. And make no mistake, number two has a huge impact on number one. Because if you know that you always have a catalog of great ideas to fall back on for those days when you wake up with nothing fresh in your head, we know that that happens, it completely removes that fear of the blank page from the equation. So how do you do it? How do you create, maintain, and use that catalog of great ideas? That is the subject of today's episode of The Lead, Idea Curation, the third in our four-part podcast series on content curation. Damien, that's my primary why when it comes to idea curation. I always want to have ideas in the queue that I can write about or go to when I'm stuck. And I do have a second why, which I'll explain a little later. But why do you believe that idea curation is so important?
Well, you're not going to have anything to write about if you don't have ideas. You're not going to have anything to talk about. I mean, it's a no-brainer. If you are a writer, if you're a content creator responsible for coming up with new ideas, then you need sources. And particularly when you're dealing with like a particular assignment, you need ideas. If you're given an assignment, you know, as a journalist or as a, you know, video blogger, you need to go out and drum up those ideas. So you need to curate ideas in order to have something to say, meaningful to say at least.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And so here's my second why, and see if you agree with this one too. Because, you know, I think that it's something that everyone listening to this podcast is going to be able to relate to, which is that I live in a perpetual state of fear that I'm going to forget a brilliant bit of inspiration and not be able to use it when I need it most. You know, I think you know what I'm talking about, right? Like that incredible one-liner that comes to you in the shower, that brilliant connection that you make between two different sources of research material, you know, while you're walking your dog, or the idea for a post series of you know, or email autoresponder that you have while cooking dinner. If you're a writer, I'm sure you've experienced this. And if you don't have a process for recording and recalling these ideas, you can lose them forever. And I mean, I shudder when I think about how many of these ideas that I've lost, but not anymore. And we'll get into that process here in a bit. But those are my two whys. And they're both about kicking fear in the knee and ripping off its mustache before it ever has time to arrest me, right? The fear of the blank page and the fear of that lost moment of divine muse intervention. So, Damien, we seem to really be liking this whole who, what, when, where, why structure. So let's jump right into the who here. Who should be curating ideas?
Guys with mustaches. No, so, I mean, really, just get, yeah, it goes back to that point, that idea of any content creator, bloggers, writers, video people. I mean, this includes designers and coders. This includes those who are running a podcast, too, even if it's a podcast based on interviews, like I think of Andrew Warner's Mixergy or Eric T. Weiser's Stay on Track. Like, these people, you know, they need to be thinking, like, who do I want to interview and why? What sort of person I want to interview? And then, you know, how am I going to approach and conduct that interview? So that's all depends upon the, you know, the ideas that they curate as they're doing their research.
I mean, could you even make it more general and just say that everybody should be curating their ideas? Because everybody has, I think, these great, you know, kind of moments of inspiration or great thoughts, you know, and we think of kind of writers, maybe content creators, as needing that swipe file or needing that place where you keep all this stuff. But don't you think everybody could benefit by keeping track of stuff they hear, stuff they think?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I mean, you think about chefs, think about landscape designers, and this is why something like Pinterest is a great curation tool, because people who cook, you know, my wife, she's a great cook and always scheming up ideas, and she's got like, you know, probably 50 boards, but all very specific to ideas that she curates. So yeah, again, I mean, but she doesn't write anything. She just, you know, she sort of pins the recipe, and so she's curating that particular idea.
Okay, so yeah, so curation really in general is a topic everybody could benefit from. The rest of this episode will really be geared more toward, you know, kind of curation for writers, for content creators, but anyone can do it and would benefit from it. But the question is now, how is it done, Damien? So you have a two-part framework, right?
Yeah, so I like to think of it like two ways. Like there's both passive and it's active idea curation. I'll start with the active one. So this begins with knowing what you want. It's kind of like problem solving. You know, you have to write a series on, for instance, like I had to write a series on native advertising. So, how are you going to write it? How are you going to arrange it? Me, my process is I just kind of dive in and start researching. And of course, this means I begin on the internet. Then I just hoard as many sources and ideas as I possibly can, and I get to a point where I'm overprepared. I mean, where I think I've tried to cover all of my bases. I give myself a sort of internal goal. For example, like, you know, when I was doing that series on native advertising, I was trying to read everything out there on native advertising. That was it. Kind of got it. And for most things, it's impossible to do because things are daily updated with too much information, but I read a whole stinking lot of articles about native advertising. I watched some videos, and so I just accumulated all these ideas. And so, of course, you know, the natural place to save them online is with Evernote. And then, so once I get all those notes accumulated, then I sit down and merge all those notes into one single note, and then I start systematically working through those notes and writing all those notes out either on little post-it notes, or I'll just start marking them, you know, directly up on my whiteboard. I have a huge whiteboard. It's 8x4 that's on my wall, and I start writing the notes out on that and arranging them, you know, thinking about like trying to segment the ideas into in particular articles, and then sort of arranging the particular a series of articles, how I see the series kind of playing out. And again, I've got more ideas than I could possibly accomplish. So I'm overprepared, and I feel very comfortable with that process, with that overpreparation in attacking sort of that assignment. And this is kind of where, I mean, we mentioned Joel Zaslavsky, and I hope I pronounced his name correctly, in the last podcast, because he mentioned a process that he called focus, but it was spelled, I think, FAOCUS. He can correct us. But it was basically with an Excel sheet, and he collected his information. This is where that would be a good idea, because when I've accumulated all those ideas and all those information, I want to be able to attribute, you know, credit back to people so that I'm not, you know, sort of plagiarizing lines or anything like that. So that's where, you know, one sense you have to be really careful. And so here's a warning too. Let me just say this real quick. When you're accumulating, like in the active, when you're in this active phase of accumulating ideas, let your theory emerge from the sources, not the other way around. In other words, start as a blank slate. Like you know, what I mean by that is don't go towards you can, it's okay to have sort of a hunch, right? But you're not looking for information to prove that hunch. You're just looking at using that hunch to sort of guide where you're going with that. Because if you like look for the information that proves your hunch, then it's going to be a lopsided argument, and otherwise you'll be perpetuating bad ideas.
Yeah.
So what about you, Jared?
I love so much about what you just talked about. Joel's theory, I believe it's FOACAS. I know there were two A's in there instead of the U. I believe that was it. We'll link to that again in case people didn't have a chance to see that last time. You know, I'm so intrigued by what you talk about with, you know, with your whiteboard and kind of putting all those ideas together. A lot of people do that too with note cards. You know, they'll have kind of ideas and even the, you know, Breaking Bad, when you listen to Vince Gilligan talk about the writer's room, you know, they would kind of you know, kind of store, it's not a storyboard necessarily, but they would basically like break out the entire story with all these note cards of each scene, what would happen next, and they'd kind of rearrange them. And, you know, so you get those ideas down, and you can really, it does give you a visual way to see how they fit together. And Franca, that's something I have not done that I want to start doing because I think it could really help me organize a lot of these ideas. You know, but you asked about my active process, and it's similar to yours. You know, I think, like you said, when you have a specific topic that you're going to be researching, you have to just dive in and dive in with no preconceived notions, as you say, you know, and let your theory emerge from the sources. For me, you know, I really try to make note of the following three things as I'm going along. You know, any remarkable one or two sentence quotes by people with authority on the topic that really illustrate a specific point very well. Any especially relevant data points. And most importantly, any stories that create some kind of emotional connection to the subject matter. Because if you think about it, you know, if your research yields you stories, a few data points, and a few great quotes, you know, that you can kind of pull out as a block quote, and of course gives you an overall general understanding of the big picture, then you have the raw information to write well about any topic, just with those three things. And what about passive curation, Damien, kind of that other, the other side of your idea curation framework?
So this is basically just you're going about life and ideas occur to you. It's kind of what you mentioned, you know, when you're taking a shower or whatever and stuff comes to you. Of course, you have to be ready to capture those ideas. And the most simple way is to keep a notebook with you or, you know, or some kind of journal. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm an Evernote guy. So I tried the whole, like, for a while in college, I used to keep one of those real small, tiny little notebooks, like, in my back pocket, and I would always have it. But I was never really good at using it, and I was never really good at taking the ideas in there and doing anything with them. You know, I just kind of lose the notebook, or I didn't really have a great process. I'm really finding that Evernote, you know, on my devices is really helping, because I always have my phone on me. And so when you have that, then you've always got Evernote. It syncs across devices. And here's another thing, too. I know some people don't like Evernote because they like actually writing down, and I am one of those. I like, you know, writing things down, you know, with a pen or a pencil. You know, because it kind of sticks more with you. Well, I just actually this past weekend got a Samsung Note 3, which has a little stylus, and it works inside of Evernote. So you can actually write on the screen. It converts it into digital text right there. So you get, in a lot of ways, the best of both worlds, because you get the writing and kind of that understanding that comes with it. But then it's really easy to organize because it's already there in Evernote. It saves a step, because I used to write everything on note cards, and then I would transcribe it into Evernote, which probably help me understand it more, because there's that extra step, but it also takes longer, you know, so it's kind of trying to be a little bit more efficient, but still getting the benefit, because this is, you know, curation. We've talked about this in both episodes so far. It's worth mentioning again, it's time consuming, you know, and so you have to balance the amount of time it takes with the benefit you're going to get. And so any efficiencies that you can add are really going to help you out.
So let me ask you, have you used the voice recognition on Evernote feature?
I have not.
The memo?
No, I haven't. I kind of want to try it, but I've never been a voice person. But I'm sure there's probably a way there that I can help. Have you used it?
Well, no, I haven't used it, but I do use, like, you know, my iPhone. I use the voice memo, like, when I'm out on a run. I don't take a pen and paper with me when I'm out running. I do carry my phone with me, and so if I have an idea that's worthy, you know, I will stop and record a voice memo, and then I like that, and, you know, it's just collecting that, because you never know. I mean, that's the whole thing. you never know, and I kind of, like, you know, to give you a great example of you'll never know is this. When I was working on my Google Plus series last year, you know, I spent, you know, probably 2 days, 8 hours plus each day of just flat out research. And I had everything I needed except the hook, sort of what was the one, you know, the one unifying element throughout that whole process. And I say that because, you know, I like what you mentioned, you know, Breaking Bad and the storyboard. And I think when I write, whether it's, you know, it's informative, like something on native advertising, or it's with Google Plus, I try to present it in a narrative. And so I think that's the way I view kind of content creation is storyboarding. So when I'm thinking through, you know, all these ideas, I'm trying to position them to tell a story. So, and like, but I had no clue what I was going to do with the hook until, and this is completely, you know, by chance, I ran across, you know, the Wikipedia article for Hunter S. Thompson, and it hit. And, you know, having read some bits on him, I knew exactly what my hook was and was able to kind of run with it. The other thing too, and tell me if you endorse this or if you actively get hostile when I say this, but I am a firm believer in writing in books, notes, ideas, whatever.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you. I do not get hostile about that. I used to not do that, and it wasn't necessarily out of some altruistic respect for books. It was really just more that I was more of a passive reader. Mm-hmm. But I found that I get so much more out of it when I underline, you know, put a little dog ear in the corner so that you can go back to it later. It's, you know, changed, you know, how I read and how I retain what I read. So I wholeheartedly endorse that idea.
So, yeah, so another passive idea of, like, you know, idea curation is James Altucher, I think.
Altucher.
All right, yeah. Okay. I'm very bad with pronunciation, so it's like I have to be dramatic about that, you know, the Altucher. So, I don't know if he still does this, but he had a great idea. He would, like, every day, he had a daily habit of making a top 10 list every day. Like, what's on, you know, and what's on his minds. It might be, like, 10 regrets you should avoid or how to do heroin legally or investing or the ultimate cheat sheet, you know, for investing. But I thought that was a great idea because it's this idea of content creation, like, meaning, like, you're kind of kicking up the dust, you know, in your own mind because we sit here and we accumulate all these ideas. Sometimes it's the act of writing will generate ideas, you know, that you can then record. And I can't tell you how many times that exercise in itself is just like journaling. For example, I'll start, you know, writing about something and I will come up with an idea and it's like, this is great. I need to pursue this. And so, you know, I also try to draw in my journal. I think, you know, that idea of thinking differently, you know, by drawing and creating sort of, I also dedicate pages in my journal of basically mind maps with connected ideas. For example, like for the other day, I was just thinking about what are all the convictions, you know, that drive copy blogger. And so I, you know, the center was copy blogger. And then I sort of, you know, radiating out from that, I had all these different ideas about, you know, what are our core convictions. And I did the same thing, like, you know, did one with my wife. I did one with another writing assignment, but, you know, keeping that journal, and just sort of recording those ideas, even though you may not use them, it's just in some sense, it helps. And I don't know about you, you know, but, you know, I'm a thinker who writes, right? I think through writing. And so it helps me to actually sit down and write. For example, you know, after I read something, I'll try to get in the habit of summarizing that particular chapter, working through that chapter and then summarize it. And that in itself, you know, generates all kinds of, you know, ideas.
I agree. And just to follow up on that, I mean, I'm the same way. I've always just been better at writing to get an idea out, whether it's making sense of a subject I'm researching or even just, I mean, like in relationships, I was always better at writing a card to explain myself than sitting there having a face-to-face conversation. You know, I like to think I've gotten better as I've gotten older, who knows? But yeah, I agree with you.
So you mentioned something about Ryan Holiday's, and we were talking earlier about Ryan Holiday's Commonplace book. Explain that idea.
Yeah. So it's, you know, and this is really an idea that can span either this episode or next episode. We're going to get into knowledge curation, but his Commonplace book, and we'll link to this in the show notes so you can get the full explanation. It's an idea that he got from Robert Greene. And basically it's a place where he puts all the information that he learns. And so, you know, when he's reading or even when he's watching a movie or just out somewhere, he'll make a note card with this information on it. And he's got a different way of organizing it. And he creates a different book for each project that he's working on. So, like, for The Obstacle is the Way, you know, he went back through some of his old notes and found these quotes from Seneca and from Marcus Aurelius and all these different people that and different stories and different things, everything that would fit. And then it's similar to what you were talking about with, you know, kind of with your whiteboard and what you did for the Native Advertising series. You get all these pieces together, you start, and it's like a puzzle, you know, and you kind of start piecing them together. And it's a really, really good process. And he's very similar to you, too, in terms of active reading. You know, I think he calls it marginalia, you know, writing in the margins, and says that, you know, all the great readers do this, period, I believe is a quote verbatim from his article. And so I want to get into that more next episode, but it's, we'll link to it in the show notes of this one anyway to go over and look at it. But it's, and that's actually where I started writing out the note cards, was doing it that way. And then again, as you'd want to do with any of these strategies, take a strategy that works for someone, see what part of it works for you, incorporate that. And maybe the whole thing doesn't work, but you can take a part of it to make your own process a little bit better. But again, the process part of this, having a system for curation is so important. Hopefully, if you get any idea from this series, I think that's one of the most important ones that you can get.
So Robert Greene is the guy who wrote the 48 Laws of Power.
And Mastery, yeah.
And Mastery, right. And he, the 48 Laws of Power, I don't know if you knew this, but it actually became the playbook for gangster rappers and negotiations and that whole industry. He had a little cottage industry behind that. So.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, 50 Cent, yeah. Like all these gangster rappers would come to him like, this is the book that we're going to use, man. So.
Did you say 50 Cent or 50 Cent?
Whatever, man. That rapper, dude, 50 Cent. Two quarters, man, whatever you call them.
Two quarters.
So a final bit of advice to anybody out there still listening is that so do something with your body that is mindless. And, you know, for me, it's typically long distance running or cutting the grass. And, you know, for Jared, it could be digging a ditch or, you know, tending a garden or
walking my dog. Thank you very much.
Or waxing his mustache. And but the idea is to let those ideas percolate, you know, let those ideas connect, because that's where it really comes down to, man. It's that process. And this is what I like to tell people too, I used to be real fearful, Jared, of losing ideas, of those ideas be going, but I got to a point where I'm like, just trust the process, right? You know, trust the subconscious. It's like, you know, if that idea was really that great, it will come back around. And that may sound a little, you know, hooky, new agey, but I kind of feel like I don't fret about it. I still write things down. You know, I haven't completely let go of writing things down, but it's that, you know, running for me, long distance or cutting their grass, it's that mindless activity where I just start thinking and, like, you know, it starts just sort of stirring things up in my mind and ideas, things that I've struggled with, you know, ideas that I can't, you know, came across will sometimes reconnect, or I'll come up with new ideas. I was like, hey, I can't tell you how many times out on a run coming back in, I've got like two or three stories that I want to write when I'm done because of all this stuff that I've accumulated since then.
Yeah, I mean, really, sometimes the best thing that you can do for idea curation is nothing at all, in the sense of, you know, not sitting there trying to think about it and trying to force it. There are so many times that I will, you know, because a lot of times when I walk my dog, that's the time I listen to podcasts. And there are so many times that I will start a podcast, I'm out there walking, and I can't focus on it because all these ideas start flooding in. You know, I start all these things that I've been thinking about or reading, they're coming in, and I just have to shut the podcast off. And I just decide, let's just do this walk in silence, and you just let the ideas come. Now, the other thing that I kind of struggle with sometimes, Damien, is you get, you know, you say kind of, you know, trust that process. Where do you draw the line between, you know, if you're cutting the grass and you have this great idea, do you ever stop anymore to write it down, or you just kind of let it go? Like, where do you kind of draw that line between maybe stopping the momentum of the ideas or stopping what you're doing to record it and just letting it go?
What I've gotten a habit of doing is I don't stop. I mean, like when I'm running or when I'm cutting grass, you know, I don't stop. What I try to do, though, is focus on that idea and then sort of write that idea. So impress that idea upon my memory, burn it on my memory in some sense by, you know, memorizing it. If it's like, you know, if it's a line, you know, if it's a sentence that kind of, you know, dropped in my mind, then I try to impress that. But I also try to think through the idea, you know, and try to develop a story behind that. So that when I get back, you know, and I may not even, you know, I may get in, eat breakfast, take a shower, and then sit down. At that point, though, I will have a strand of thought with kind of milestones that I'll be able to key in. I was like, you know, what was that story about? It was the, you know, I was thinking about the fuzzy creatures, you know, and the pistol, and then, it, you know, it'll, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, and that's what I mean by trusting your process, because if you can have those sort of anchors, of those ideas that, you know, those kind of physical, tangible things, you can usually kind of find your way back to that original idea.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe I just don't trust myself yet, because if you ever, you know, email me one day and you just don't get a reply and no one can hear from me, it's probably because I got hit by a car because I was out walking and, you know, looking down at my phone, writing a new note into Evernote because I just had that thought. I'm going to try that, though. I like that idea of, you know, you try and make those connections, turn it into a story, you know, fuzzy animals and pistols.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah, I need to try that, because I don't like stopping the momentum to record the idea, because maybe it could have gone even further, and maybe if you stop to record it, you don't let it get all the way developed in your own head.
Right.
It's a great point. And just to reiterate this point about going out and doing something mindless with your body, you know, this isn't just us kind of making stuff up. Study after study after study shows that activities like walking or whatever, cutting the grass, improve creativity. And there was just one in April of this year that Stanford released that found that a person's creative output increased by an average of 60% when walking, and that the creative juices continue to flow after you sit back down. You know, and again, it's because your subconscious mind has a chance to start making these connections between all the knowledge in your head, you know, which is why you need to be ready for when that moment of inspiration strikes, whether it's having your notebook and pen ready, whether it's having a mental strategy ready of, you know, thinking about it as a story and burning it into your mind like Damien talked about. Whatever it is, make sure that when those ideas come, you have that way mentally or physically of recording them. You know, and you don't know, again, where great ideas are going to come from. They could come from the lyric in a song, from a photo you see on Google Plus, or even just a conversation you hear on a plane while you're waiting, you know, for your plane to take off. You know, and if you just look around yourself right now, you know, wherever you're listening to this, there are literally hundreds or even thousands of ideas all around you always. And so, you know, whenever that moment of inspiration strikes you, even if you don't know why, record it or, you know, burn it into your mind. You know, you may never use it again. And most of the stuff you record, you probably won't use it again. But it might end up being literally the seed to the most popular blog post you ever write, right? Or, you know, the beginning, you know, when you need that intro, the missing piece to that blog post, whatever. Who knows? If you don't record it, then it's just a forgotten memory. And a forgotten memory is not going to do you any good. That's about all I got. Damien, it's been fun, as always. Looking forward to recording episode 4. Anything else for this one?
No, thank you very much. I appreciate everybody listening.
All right, we'll be back next week with episode 4.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Lead. If you found this episode useful, and if you're enjoying the content curation series and the other content that we're putting out, we would definitely appreciate a rating or a review on iTunes. And if you're not on iTunes and you want to listen to the show on Stitcher, The Lead is available there, too. Just go to copyblogger.com/Stitcher. And if you just want to tweet about us, email a link to a friend, we would really appreciate any help you can give us spreading the word. All right, well, thank you again for listening. We will be back next week with the 4th and final installment in the content curation series. And remember, because we're now on our summer posting schedule at Copyblogger, the episode will be posted on Thursday, not Friday next week, just like this one was. All right, everybody, take care, and we will talk to you next week.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. Lord, have mercy on my rough and rough.